Chapter 4, Birth of Camp Abilities. Quote by Dr. Monica Lepore, co-founder of Camp Abilities. Our job is the best job in the world. I picked the right thing to do with my life. Photo description: Lauren, Monica Lepore, and Maria Lepore Stevens at the first camp. I have a really good idea, I said. I waited for my friend Monica to respond on the other end of the line. Monica Lepore had been my mentor since my freshman year of college, advising me about college and graduate school, my teaching job at Perkins School for the Blind, and my doctorate at Oregon State. Now, 12 years after meeting her at Westchester University in Pennsylvania, I was calling her from Brockport, New York. "Okay," she said, straight as a finish line. She wasn't surprised by my statement at all. By now, I had a long history of sharing ideas with her. I could imagine her settling into a chair, ready for another brainstorm together. "Remember those VIP programs?" I asked. Monica and I had worked together on the visually impaired person programs during my 4 years at Westchester, bringing adults who were blind to the college for outdoor activities. "Of course," she said. "It would be hard to forget the laughter we all shared, the dinners out, the camaraderie we felt spending so much time with people who trusted us." "I want to make that magic happen again," I said. "What about doing something like that with kids?" When she responded, it was in the exuberant tone she used when one of her children with disabilities made a slam dunk. "Great idea," she said. I told her I'd been exploring the only sports education camps for kids with blindness were for athletes who were already good at the Paralympic sports. Kids didn't go there and learn how to play goal ball. They went there to learn how to be better goal ball players. "Why don't we start a real developmental sports camp for kids who are blind?" I proposed. "We'll base it on what we did at VIP, but we'll do it for kids. Why don't we do it for a week?" "All right, so who's this we?" Monica's voice lilted with knowing. "I'll be the director and you be the assistant director." She never hesitated. "Okay, all right, let's go." I hung up the phone with Monica, elated she was on board. I walked out to the porch, looked at the puffy white clouds in the sky, stretched my arms as high as they would go, and then pumped them and shouted, "Yes, this is happening!" Over the next hour, I wrote up a business plan, and shortly afterwards sent it to Monica. Having her by my side as we brought Camp Abilities into the world would be invaluable. From dream to reality. It had taken me a while to make that call to Monica. New at Brockport, I had just landed a $13,000 grant and didn't even know whom to contact to get the funds. I didn't really know anyone on campus yet. How did one go about reserving facilities? Where could I find a nurse with a whole week free who would work for cheap or even volunteer? I saw so many barriers. Where would I find the campers? Where would I get the counselors? What about insurance? How reluctant would the college be to allow a sports camp on campus, particularly one for children who are blind? I was standing in the doorway of my office pondering all this when Dr. Winnick, esteemed founder of the Adapted Physical Education Graduate Program, as well as Swim and Gym, came by and asked me how things were going. I told him about my new grant, adding that I was going to wait a year to start the camp. "I just got here and don't know anyone yet," I explained. "I have to wait until I meet people." His response was catalytic. "Lauren, how are you going to meet anyone if you don't start the camp?" Another mentor had given me the nudge I needed precisely when I needed it. Someone else also encouraged me during that time. Dr. Paul Ponchilia, a colleague who is himself blind, had been a leading light in our field for 40 years and had already started the very first sports camp for those with visual impairments in Western Michigan. It's called Sports Education Camp. He too built my confidence to go forward. And then there was my grandfather. Once I got the thumbs up from Monica, I knew I needed to go see him. A smart businessman and a leader in his community, Lou Lieberman could always turn a stranger into a friend because he was a good listener. He had always made time for me from my childhood all the way through college and into my teaching career. After asking about my goals and dreams, he would offer me advice, and he was always right. Now, at 93, he was slim and pale with thinning white hair. He regarded me in his usual position with his legs crossed and hands tucked in his pants to keep them warm. "Grandpa, I'm going to start a camp," I told him. He nodded and asked me the question that had helped me find the right direction at several other times in my life. "Well, what do you need next?" But this time, instead of waiting for my answer, he promptly went out to buy a computer. A few hours later, he came back and installed it. Then he asked me how to send and receive emails. He shook his finger at me, as he always did when he wanted to make a point. "I'm going to help you." And indeed, he did help me in a very significant way. By connecting me to the Lions Club, long champions of the community of people who are visually impaired or deafblind, he and my father were both charter members of their clubs near Westchester, Pennsylvania. In 1925, Helen Keller had spoken at a Lions convention. "The opportunity I bring to you, Lions, is this: to foster and sponsor the work of the American Foundation for the Blind. Will you not help me hasten the day when there shall be no preventable blindness, no little deaf, blind child untaught, no blind man or woman unaided? I appeal to you, Lions, you who have your sight, your hearing, you who are strong and brave and kind, will you not constitute yourselves Knights of the Blind in this crusade against darkness?" The Lions had taken up her cause, and with some initial help from my grandfather, the Brockport Lions took up mine. They, and eventually Lions clubs across the country, would play an enormous role in the establishment, operation, and expansion of camp abilities, first by supplying the majority of food during camp week, and then by volunteering time, purchasing equipment, paying campers' fees, and providing transportation. I began to develop my vision for camp abilities as a place where sports would be accessible to every student every day. Ordinary camps have counselors who organize and supervise activities in groups. I wanted more. I wanted each child to have a coach who would consistently teach skills, inspire effort, and offer feedback on each sport. I wanted children who are blind or visually impaired to feel the joy of accomplishing things others say they could not do. I also wanted them to be with children like themselves, sleep in the dorms, play, socialize, and make new friends. I wanted them to learn, excel, and find confidence in their abilities. To accomplish all that and to train future teachers by giving them one-on-one experience working with children, we recruited 22 undergraduate and graduate students from SUNY Brockport and SUNY Cortland, as well as a few local high school students. Unsure how to recruit campers, I enlisted Pam Mary Janowski, another Brockport colleague who for many years had run the Empire State Games for the Physically Challenged. The Games for the Physically Challenged are similar to the Special Olympics, but for children with physical disabilities. The Games for the Physically Challenged is held annually around New York State and at Brockport each fall. Pam had a large database of children with visual impairments in New York who had competed in the games. That database led us to many future campers. Pam later proved to be a camp abilities angel, running our food program for years alongside her sister-in-law, Helen. She not only solicited food donations from Lions clubs, but also cooked, set up, and served each meal for the week. Her children acted as volunteer counselors, and her son Michael even helped us set up our camp in Alaska. He loved it so much he moved there and still lives in the Kenai Peninsula. But getting started that first year was hard. Day by day, I asked myself what in the world I was doing. Day by day, things came together. We had no equipment of our own. We had to use what we could borrow from SUNY Brockport, the Empire State Games for the Physically Challenged, and the local community. Day by day, I gained the confidence, the help, and the resources to do what I knew I was meant to do. More than that, to give kids with visual impairment opportunities and access to sports and physical activity. Camp begins. Miraculously, Camp Abilities opened on June 24, 1996, with 27 campers who are visually impaired. To set the tone from the start, We called them athletes. Achievement was to be the goal, not just participation. Too many programs for children who are blind or visually impaired stop short of achievement and settle for merely getting children involved. Participation is necessary, of course, but it's only a starting point toward the goal of helping children reach their potential. I wanted children with visual impairments, blindness, or deafblindness to excel, not just to get through a mile run, but to beat the time of 10 minutes and to further drop the time from there. My theory has been that from striving for personal excellence on the playing fields and in the gyms comes the confidence to achieve personal goals in life. Above all, I wanted the children to feel the thrill of accomplishing something they hadn't known they could do. I wanted children who had already felt the agony of defeat to experience the thrill of victory and to share that joy with others who might be feeling it for the first time. To children living in a world of, "You can't do that," I wanted to shout out, "Oh yes, you can." I wanted them to believe in themselves. We soon found that as our campers learned athletic skills in a new environment, they also learned more about the world. One of the athletes that first year was Jeremy, a 9-year-old boy who was blind and autistic. He was very smart and curious. He also asked a lot of questions. One night, I took him canoeing on the Erie Canal in Brockport, close to a huge floodgate that spanned the canal and reached 4 stories high. I tried to explain the floodgate to him, but it was so large and abstract that it was hard to describe adequately. Some teenage boys were jumping off the floodgate. I yelled up to them, "Hey, my friend Jeremy here is blind and can't see how high that floodgate is. Can you yell down so he can hear how high it is?" They called out their names and then proceeded to jump into the water, shouting Jeremy's name the whole way down. "Hi, Jeremy!" Jeremy clapped. "I get it. I know how high it is." We thanked the boys and paddled on our way. This was a great lesson for Jeremy and me about how to explain the size of large objects and about the kindness and spontaneous creativity of strangers. In the middle of the week, it came time to practice the discus. We had only the adult-sized discus, which was too heavy for many of our athletes, so we had to improvise by borrowing plates from the cafeteria and throwing them into the grassy areas. When I first taught Jeremy to throw, his follow-through turned him away from the grass and towards the concrete pavement. "Jeremy, please don't face that way," I said. "The plate will break on the pavement." He answered right back, "Why not? I want to hear it break." I told him we were just borrowing the plates from the cafeteria, so they are not ours to break. "Please," he asked over and over. "I want to hear it break." Finally, I gave in. "Okay, ask the cafeteria workers if you can break one plate on the pavement." They graciously gave their permission, somehow understanding what hearing that sound might mean for him. The next day, Jeremy took a plate and positioned himself to throw it so it would land on the pavement. Then he determinedly threw the plate, which hit the ground and shattered into pieces. "That was great," he yelled, clapping his hands. After he helped clean up and thanked the cafeteria workers, he never said another word about it. But the time and effort we took with Jeremy were well worth it. This incident was a life lesson for him, my students, and me. It would never have occurred to us to use deliberate plate breaking as part of a track and field lesson to increase an athlete's understanding of the world. This would not be the last time that we incorporated learning outside of the athletic curriculum. David, a wonderful pianist, was another athlete at camp that first year. He had never met another person who was blind. His parents always had him wear glasses, so he assumed that everyone who was blind wore glasses. When other athletes told him they didn't, he was confused. That was when he learned that some kids have more vision than others, and that some kids wear glasses and some kids don't. I learned something from David as well. For a few nights, we camped out in the fields by the high ropes course. Early one morning, I woke up in the tent I was sharing with David and two others and saw they were all still sleeping. After a while, I thought I noticed David's arm moving under his pillow. But as he lay face down, I assumed he was still asleep. I waited quietly for another half hour, and David suddenly asked, "Lauren, are you up?" I was surprised. "Yes, are you?" "Yes," he replied. "I was just reading." David had his Braille book under the pillow and had been reading for an hour. This never occurred to me. Some early lessons. That first year of Camp Abilities was challenging, exhilarating, fatiguing, and illuminating. I learned so many lessons that year. The first was the importance of each athlete having a counselor. One day, a campus policeman pulled up in his car and asked, "Are these two kids yours?" Two campers had lost their group and wandered off together across campus. Luckily, nothing happened, but from then on, we strictly adhered to the one-on-one rule. We began with too many sports, 3 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. We rushed to activities after breakfast and had very little time between for socializing, learning group cheers, transition, or rest. I was getting a lot of resistance about the packed schedule, as there were often tears and exhausted athletes. So we soon cut back to 2 sports in the morning and 2 in the afternoon, with recreational sports in the evening. That was a much better pace. I also learned when not to try to save money. That first summer, I knew I needed a nurse, and it seemed logical to employ one who had recently graduated from our nursing program at Brockport. The woman we chose seemed ready, with a stethoscope, bandages, band-aids, gauze, and some ice packs. She knew how to administer medications. But when an athlete named Fatima got sick in the middle of the week and needed to go home, we discovered our nurse's limitations. I called Fatima's mother to tell her to come and pick her athlete up, and she was not happy because she lived over 2 hours away. She asked us what Fatima's temperature was. Our nurse could not answer because she had no thermometer. The mother was incensed. "How can you run a sports camp for children without a thermometer?" She was very frustrated when she came to retrieve her daughter, even talking about suing our camp. After we explained to her that this was our first year and we were learning as best we could, she calmed down and wished us luck. The next year, we got a seasoned nurse, whom we came to affectionately call Nurse Judy. She arrived with all the important equipment. Fatima returned and was healthy all week. I also quickly learned to select only counselors who truly wanted to be there. By the middle of the first week, 2 high school students were losing interest. They told me they hadn't wanted to volunteer, but did so because their father wanted them to work with handicapped children. Immature do-gooders were not what we needed. Inattention could be dangerous. From then on, the standards for recruiting and selection of counselors went way up. I took a lesson from Camp Abilities myself and raised my expectations. For the next few years, I was a one-woman show in many ways, making reservations, writing grants, raising funds, advertising, speaking to Lions clubs around the state, and organizing campers, counselors, specialists, nurses, interpreters, food, dorms, and equipment, totally by myself. Since we had no cell phones at that time, I had to do all of my work from my home or office phone. I could be stuck in my office all day making phone calls and waiting for responses. Of course, during camp, where I really wanted to be was outside cheering on the athletes in their games. I did have a wonderful group of Lions, Cindy and Rich Gialli, Jim Schiebel, Greg Lund, and Tammy Deacon. Nurse Judy also helped with many things, but in the day-to-day tasks, I was alone. In 1998, my friend Sarah Silverstone gave me the idea of asking the provost for a graduate assistant who would work on my grant and help with camp all year long. The provost said yes, and the Camp Abilities Graduate Assistantship Program was born. In exchange for 10 hours of work a week with me, SUNY Brockport would pay tuition for 24 credits of the students required 30, and my grant would pay a stipend of $8,000. I even found an office the graduate assistant could use all year. The first year, I had several applicants, but because this was the first time assistantships were offered, I was unclear what I was looking for. I asked my friend and colleague, Dr. Kathy Houston Wilson, to help me decide. In the end, we chose Megan O'Connell, who had just graduated from St. Bonaventure University in Allegheny, New York, with a degree in physical education. Megan was enthusiastic, smart, and organized. She helped with fundraising, including our first ever dinner and auction, which was a big hit and brought in about $4,000 that first year. Megan also collected data at camp for her thesis, The Effects of Tactile Modeling and Physical Guidance on Skill Acquisition. Not only did she finish her thesis by the end of the summer, she was hired right away at the Arizona School for the Deaf and the Blind. During her first year in Arizona, she started a new Camp Abilities Arizona, which today is in its 20th year. Megan has since moved to teach at Perkins School for the Blind and helped to start the Camp Abilities there. Thank goodness for the graduate assistantship program. Most of our graduate assistants have gone on to get wonderful positions in adapted physical education, and they are making a difference in the lives of children with visual impairments and their families. See Appendix A for their names.